What's going on, everybody? This is Devin here with The Kickback. I'm here with my man, my best friend, the bro, Dustin Mueller. Say hi to them.
What's up, folk?
You know, I just want to take a quick time. I just want to say thank you for coming out here. Appreciate your time. You know, you just come from a baseball game. Okay, can you elaborate on that a little bit? Like, how did the game go today?
So, just to catch everybody up, I coach Bartlett High School's baseball team here in Anchorage, Alaska. And it was right now, because we're in preseason, this is our second to last game for preseason. It's pretty much like a learning process right now, especially with the younger guys, the freshmen, just trying to get them in, get them some playing time. So we also played Homer, which we have. I literally haven't seen them in years. I haven't known nothing about them. I haven't seen nothing about them. So it was a new team. It was a new game. So it was a learning experience for sure, but we took the loss in that one. But thankfully, it's preseason. It's just a learning time right now, so we can get ready and get everybody going for the actual regular season that's coming up here in the next couple games. So it's just learning and moving through, getting everybody's body loose for the actual regular season coming up.
Right. I was at the game today. I saw you were a little mad earlier. You were talking after the game. You were talking about how, you know, some players, I'm not going to say names at all, but some players were just not reading the signals, you know, kind of like they weren't really fully into the game the first half. But when I was there, I was there at the last half of the game. It really seemed like they kind of turned around, you know. The last inning was kind of a bust, but, you know, majority of the game when I was there, it seemed like they had the momentum. And then when you were talking about Homer, you were like, I haven't seen Homer forever, like
since my freshman year, and I'm 20, so that was like 6 years ago.
That's crazy, man. Give a little experience about your personal, like how you play. You know, you're a coach now. You know, eventually, you're not always just a coach. You know, you had to be a player. You're still young, so talk a little bit about how, like, growing up playing baseball, and then like how you really just your whole life was really about it.
So, I was kind of born into the baseball family. My uncle ended up playing at a couple different colleges and almost got signed to the Mets, but he ended up having to get Tommy John, which is a huge surgery in his elbow, and he was a pitcher, so that pretty much took him out of the game. But almost everything that I learned from him and hanging out with all the baseball teams that he played for and the college teams and everything pretty much set me up for the rest of my life and everything that I wanted to do when it came to baseball. But me personally, I've been playing baseball since I'm 4, and I'm 20 now, so I played for about 15 years. I played in Alaska for most of my life, played a little bit in Texas, played in Georgia, played in Missouri, played in Oklahoma. I ended up going to three different high schools, actually. So my freshman and sophomore year, I was at the school that I'm coaching at now, Bartlett High School. And my junior year, I played for Broken Arrow in Oklahoma. And my senior year, I played for Farmington High School in Missouri. And then I ended up going to college and playing baseball at the William Woods University in Fulton, Missouri. And just having those experiences and being able to use everything that I went through for the 15 years that I played and everything that I learned from everybody that I learned stuff from, I pretty much was a sponge for my entire life, just soaking up everything that I possibly could in baseball. So that way, when I transitioned into being a coach, I could kind of use that and release everything that I have soaked up in the past 15 years and kind of release it on everybody that I'm coaching now, and everybody, and not even that I coach, like I help other guys that are on other teams. I help younger guys. I actually I'm gonna start helping out. I went to Wendler Middle School here in Anchorage, Alaska too, and they're starting a baseball program for the middle schools, so that way they can kind of get used to getting into the high school level. So I'm gonna start helping out with Wendler Middle School's baseball team too, so that way I can kind of, that's gonna go into a little bit later of the segment, but that's gonna go kind of into my recruiting side of coaching and everything. But just coaching in general, just me also being a younger guy just coming out of baseball is kind of helping with like some of the guys that are on the baseball team that I coach right now, I actually played with a little bit before I graduated and before I couldn't play anymore. So just them knowing and them seeing my skill level and knowing that I know what I'm talking about, and them knowing how I played and how I used to play and everything, kind of transitions into helping me coach a little bit, because these guys can be like, okay, I can listen to this guy, because not only did I play with him and he was a leader on this baseball team, but now he's coaching and I know that he knows what he's talking about.
You're a coach right now. They call you, your assistant coach, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you have far as like your plans for the future? Are you thinking about trying to take over this team? Like, I know we talked a little bit. I know the head coach right now is currently there for at least another 2 to 3 years. But you think if you stay with this program for long enough, you think that eventually that you would want to take over it?
My uncle that I was talking about before, he coached the team, the one team that has a banner up in Bartlett High School's gym. And so it would be kind of cool to take after his footsteps and kind of do the same thing, like try to get them not only in the state championship, but like start competing for actual rings, because we really haven't gotten a chance to do that in a long time. So I really want to bring this program back from the ground and get it going, so that we can just have a better track record.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk, you know, there's voices around saying that, you know, they really like your coaching style. They really like, you know, what you're teaching to the kids, your philosophy of baseball. There's different people around have been kind of, you know, expressing that they're saying that, you know, they're ready for you to take that next step. If the opportunity comes sooner or later, say if it was from a different team, would you take it, or would you stick with your alma mater? Are you going to stick with your school?
Honestly, I think it's about where you were as a kid, where you grew up. I think going back to my old high school, it was big for me, not only because I just wanted to, but also because it shows that I'm willing to come back to my roots and help out with the program that I used to play for. And so ultimately, if I was faced with a decision and somebody really asked me to come be a head coach somewhere else, I not only with me wanting to stay with Bartlett, but also me just being young, just being 20 years old, like I honestly don't see myself taking a head coaching job like right now, or even close to now, honestly. Like, really, in all reality, like if I was faced with a situation where I was only the only coach at Bartlett, I would ultimately bring on several coaches to cover all strengths of baseball, whether it be fielding, batting, catcher's coach, pitcher's coach, outfielder's coach, infielder's coach, whatever. I honestly feel like I would bring in somebody that would be a great manager, and I would also bring in somebody that would also be a great head coach. And I think that I would also be still, I would stay at an assistant head coach or an assistant coach, because I just don't see myself at 20 to 22 or 23 being able to outcoach somebody that has more years and more experience than me in that position on a baseball team.
You never know until you take that jump, though. You never, because you think about it. We're talking a little bit earlier about one of the coaches on the team right now. He was a semi-professional hockey player at the age of 16.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was basically professional, doing professional workouts, professional playing with these guys who are probably like 20, 30 years old, maybe even 40 in their prime, you know?
Yeah.
All these players, you know, but he's a young guy, you know? He probably just had to take that jump, you know? You don't personally think that you can... Is it that you don't think that you want to take all the responsibility, or you just think that it's more like a learning thing? You just want to sit back and just absorb as much baseball knowledge, learn from these older guys who have more experience? Is it more like that?
Yeah, it's more of like, if I brought in a bunch of guys to create a really good coaching staff, it would mostly be, or pretty much everybody would be older than me. They would have more experience in baseball. They would have already seen more. They've seen more situations. So like, when it comes to that stuff, when I watch them and I listen to them, then I can understand situational baseball better. My IQ goes up. Like, this is a game where it's a game where you always are learning something. It doesn't matter how old you get. It doesn't matter how young you are. You're always learning something. Professional baseball players are always learning something new every single day about this game, and their IQ is forever growing when it comes to this game. And so for me, it's not about the responsibility. I could take the responsibility all day of taking a team of guys and creating a championship caliber team, I can do that. I have the IQ to bring a team from behind. In reality, that's how we're seen, is we're Bartlett is behind everybody. Bartlett isn't as good as everybody else. And that's what I'm trying to get us out of, is this mentality that we're not as good as everybody else, when we really are. We're in the game. We're in there. We're in with everybody else. We just need to believe it as a team and not just me. It's got to be those guys too. And so I think the responsibility part is no problem whatsoever. It's just wanting to take in more information and having more experience before I take over just the role of being a manager or head coach.
Right. And as a coach, you know, you have all these players who are looking up to you guys, and, you know, like, they're following your guys' lead. How do you guys find the best way to keep your players motivated in a situation, especially, say, in a game where you guys are down? How do you guys keep your players, you know, with the high head, keep their heads high, you know, chins up?
Baseball is a game of pitch by pitch. Like, things can go super south with one pitch, or things can go a completely different way for your team within one pitch. I mean, people walk off games with one pitch. People can strike out the last batter with one pitch and end a series. Like, it's just, every pitch is a new opportunity for you to better yourself and take the lead, do whatever you need to do in that game. And not only that, but with high schoolers, obviously it's different in college and in professional and everything else. But with high school right now, we only play 7 innings, but you have 7 innings of baseball. That means if you're down in the first inning by one run and you just think that the game's over, you have 6 more innings to play. You have 6 more innings. You have probably 2 or 3 more at bats. You have many more opportunities in the field to make plays, and you're going to be presented with those opportunities. And so when you're presented with those opportunities, your head needs to be in the game, and your head needs to be in a place where if the ball is hit to you, or if anything happens where you are in the situation of turning this game around, you can execute.
Yeah, like, I know, like, in the game of baseball, you have say when your team's up to bat, you know, all your guys you have in the dugout, guys who are not on the hole and this and that, they're cheering the guy on, you know, they're making good noise, they're saying hilarious things, you know. How does that kind of wreck in the game of baseball, and how does that help the batter versus the pitcher?
I think every sport is a mental game, and I think winning it mentally can help you also winning it physically. So when everybody in the dugout is off the bench, up and cheering, just keeping their heads in the game, knowing the situation, knowing what needs to happen, and they're just up and making noise or cheering on the guy that's up to bat or whatever, like, as long as we're up and we're energetic and we're ready, it shows that we're, in number one, in the game, and number two, it shows that we're ready for our next at bat, whether you're up to bat on deck in the hole or just waiting for your at bat in the dugout. Now, it doesn't matter. No matter what, you're showing that you're in the game and you're ready to play, because you're up and just getting ready, getting rowdy for your team. So, and not only that, but when we're up to bat and the pitcher's throwing and everything, and say he walks a guy or walks two guys or something like that in a row, now you're sitting there like, okay, we're kind of getting in his head. Like, he's getting off his game. He's throwing more balls. He's not throwing as many strikes. Then I can kind of tell the guys, like, hey, he's already walked this many guys, so stay in his head. Like, don't swing at pitches outside the strike zone, stuff like that. So it really helps our game mentally, especially with the younger guys, understanding that it's going to help our game a lot mentally if we can stay there and stay up mentally, so that it helps us physically when we get out there. Because I mean, even me, when I was playing in high school and in college, like, when I was on the on deck circle, or when I was going up to bat and my teammates were, like, getting up and yelling my name or saying, like, stay hot, like, keep going, like, wait for your pitch, stuff like that, like, it got me pumped to hit. Like, I was ready to hit. Like, obviously I would be patient, wait for my pitch, and attack the strike zone for sure. But, like, just going up to bat and knowing that my teammates had my back mentally and physically, like, I was ready, and it gave me a boost.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I just remember, you know, just sports in general, like you said, sports in general, it's, you know, it's really all about momentum if you really think about it. Like a football game, you know, you play a football game, you know, if you got the good momentum, you're going to march down the field, that field, and score. If you got good momentum, the crowd's cheering for you, you're going to get that sack on the fourth down, you know. I get that with baseball. And then like we previously said, you know, we live in Alaska. Alaska's not really known for recruiting out here, you know. Yeah, a couple people get recruited, a couple people go D1, you know. But if you really think about it, most people go to a JC, they go to a junior college, or they go to NAIA, you know what I'm saying? They do all that. So, like, how do you think as a coach are preparing your players to go for the next level, to get recruited, you know? Are you guys out there, you know, trying to, you know, get videotape? Are you guys trying to, you know, talk to different college coaches out there? Do you guys know anybody who's already trying to look at your guys' players?
It ultimately comes down to, like, last year is a great example. Last year we had zero seniors. We had zero seniors, so that's like all of our leadership was coming from our juniors and sophomores instead of our seniors and juniors. So as far as college goes, it comes down to making sure that these guys actually want to go to college and play baseball. Because, like, we have a kid on the team, I'll just throw his name out there because, I mean, he'll be known for baseball this year anyway, Ryan Wood. Ryan Wood is a great baseball player. Like, he's fucking phenomenal. He's a great kid. He's a great baseball player, good in school. He skis. He's on the track team. Like, the kid is a phenomenal guy. He just, right now, I talked to him, and he's a great baseball player in the state of Alaska, and I talked to him and was like, hey, do you want to do this in the next level? Because you really could. And his reaction to it was, well, you know, I really don't know yet. I don't know if I want to be a pilot or if I want to play baseball. And so I told him, and from my perspective and from other guys that I know's perspective, what it comes down to is senior night. You know, on senior night, when you get there and you're playing in that baseball game, you're going to feel one of two things. Either this is really fun, I'm glad I'm doing this with my friends, but I know that this is it. Like, I'm going to have fun this year and that's it. Or when you get to senior night and you're feeling the chills and you see your parents and you get to walk around with your parents on the field for senior night, and you're out there and you're just blood, sweat, and tears is left on that field that night. You really connect with it, and you really know this is what I want to do in the future. And so as far as recruiting with that, it comes down to senior night and them actually wanting to go to the next level. There's guys that have told me they want to go to the next level, and I'll do everything in my power to get them there, whether it be taping, having their parents tape them, getting them on different apps, different websites, whatever I got to do. We also, every Legion season at Mulcahy Stadium downtown in Anchorage, there is a college camp for an entire week. And so I encourage every single one of my players, wanting to go to college or not, either way, I encourage them to go to this camp the entire week, so that way they can get not only the IQ that they'll get from the college coaches that are there, because there's about 10 to 12 college teams that come up, and college coaches that come up and, like, not only recruit the seniors and juniors, but also help out the freshmen and sophomores get ready for their upper class playing baseball and everything, getting ready for the next level. And me just coming out of college and me knowing what it was like, I pretty much try to explain to my guys as best as I possibly can what it's going to be like when they get there. Because, I mean, you could be a pitcher in high school, and you could go to college, and your college coaches could be like, well, you might have been a pitcher in high school, but we think that you're a great right fielder. And so they'll throw you out in right field, and guess what? You either play right field because you're on a scholarship, or you just don't play. And that's how it goes when you get to upper levels. Like, in high school, that's your time to experiment, figure out what you want to do in the future, what position you want to play in the future, all that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to what you're going to do in the future, it's going to be up to them. It's going to be up to their college coaches. They're going to know more than me. And that's why I go to the college coach camp at Mulcahy every year, because I like to go and I like to listen and watch what they do, so that way my IQ grows, so I can do what they do with my guys to get them ready for that level. So that's pretty much recruitment, and then recruitment into, like, not just my high schoolers into college, but also middle schoolers into high school, recruiting them to come to our school and play baseball. That's going to be a big part, like I was talking about earlier, going over to Wendler and helping coach them and helping and bring guys from my team, like seniors and juniors that know what they're talking about, bringing them with me to come and help coach the Wendler middle school team. So that way they're like, oh, okay, like the Bartlett coach is really cool. If they like me, that's awesome. If they like the guys, that's even better. They'll get that chemistry kind of going a little bit. They'll know each other. So that way when their kids come to East or Bartlett, they'll eventually pick either one. And for Legion, they can play for either one. So they can come over to Bartlett and they can play for us and already know us and have that chemistry and everything. So that's part of recruiting from middle school into high school for me.
Yeah, I like we were saying earlier about, you know, especially when, you know, like when players get, you know, recruited to colleges, you know, a lot of times you see, like you said, the positions get changed, you know what I'm saying? You might be a pitcher, but then, like you said, they might make you an outfielder.
Yeah.
The main thing you really see this, like what sport you mainly see it is in football. I see it happen all the time, you know. I see guys play, they might be a quarterback in high school. They might be a quarterback in college, but when they go to NFL, they're going to be a receiver, a running back. A perfect example, Denard Robinson, you know. I get that. But, you know, we've been talking a whole lot about, you know, you as a coach, and, you know, and then your players. But let's get a little bit on a little personal level. You personally, what are some, like, triumphs and struggles you had when you yourself were playing, you know, Little League ball down in Texas versus then come up here playing the NACA, to high school, to eventually college, you know, what were your ups and downs? What were like your major points, you would say?
I really had to learn the difference between the competition level. So when you're in Little League, you're playing on a smaller field, smaller bases, smaller distance for almost everything. And so you get used to that because you play in Little League so long, you get used to how small it is, the competition and everything. So going Little League wasn't too bad. And for me, because I'm 6'4", I was always a taller and bigger kid than everybody else. So like I never got a chance to play T-ball. They had to move me up as soon as I started playing into coach pitch. I didn't even get a chance to even start on T-ball. So for me, I was always a younger guy on all the teams, but I was also one of the taller and bigger guys because everybody wanted to move me up to play with the bigger guys, and so I had to learn to play with the older guys and the bigger guys, and so that kind of helped me grow to the player that I was and the IQ that I got because of that. But going from middle school to high school was probably one of the biggest jumps I made because I played with Bartlett's varsity team my eighth grade year with a really good friend of ours, Alec Dudley, who's doing freaking phenomenal in bowling right now for Iowa Central Community College.
Not just him, Alec too, you know.
Or Alec and Ryan, and the brothers.
Those men, you know, these are some people. You remember these names, Alec Dudley, Ryan Dudley. These two names you're going to hear, you know, if you're not a bowling fan, you're going to hear these guys' names in sports sometime, you know. These guys are great bowlers, top in the nation, in my opinion. These guys are just, you know, they go out there, this is a whole life, you know, and train for this. And not only that, but these guys were amazing baseball players too, you know. As far as, like, what would you say, like, what really say was set you back from, what set you back from continuing your baseball career as of today? You know, you're, like I said, you're only 20 years old, you're about to be 21, you're still young, you're still a kid, you know, your baseball career is over, but what was the main reason that stopped everything?
It was mostly growth in college. It was, With the moving around that I did, the coaches in Oklahoma and in Missouri, they had their team set. Oklahoma, the Broken Arrow High School that I went to, I give them 100% props. They're a national championship baseball team. They're a giant school. They're a great school. I recommend people in Oklahoma to go there. If you're listening from Oklahoma ever, I recommend that school. It's a great school to go to. But those coaches pretty much had their guys set. When you grow up in towns like Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, or Farmington, Missouri, you kind of grow up there and you grow roots and everybody kind of knows who you are. You get pretty much corn fed into a star in that town. And so me coming from Anchorage, Alaska, I was pretty much frowned upon and looked down upon because I was from this place where people realistically think that we live in igloos and don't play real baseball and think that nobody really good athletically comes out of this state when there are great athletic people that come out of this state. And so it's kind of a downfall for me coming from Alaska and them just kind of frowning upon me and not giving me the opportunity that I felt like I was dealt. And so with that happening, I didn't play as much when I moved down to Oklahoma. I didn't play as much when I was in Missouri, which left me with the problem of not necessarily growing into the player that I should have and that I could have. I was still at the same IQ level. I was still throwing I was a pitcher and a first baseman. I was still throwing the same speed. I was still hitting the same way, and I just wasn't growing at all because these guys weren't putting any work into me, because they were like, well, I already have these guys that I know, so I'm going to put work into these guys. I don't know this kid. I don't know how long he's going to be here, so I don't really care for this kid too much. And so that's kind of the difficulty that I was faced with for the last 2 years of high school. And so going into college, it was a real eye-opener for me, and it was really tough trying to get playing time and stuff like that when everybody pretty much looks down on you just because you're from the state of Alaska. And that's a big problem in Alaska right now, is athletes from here don't get enough credit. They don't get enough respect. And I think they're growing to get more respect now. There's more athletes going D1. There's more athletes getting noticed. And so that's great. I just wish that back in my day when I was playing in high school, that we could have had that opportunity, and we never did. We never had that opportunity back then because nobody was really caring about Alaska. And then also another thing that didn't help was I slipped and fell at a fraternity at the college that I was going to, and because I slipped and fell, I herniated two discs in my lower back, and I pinched a nerve and caused sciatica in my right leg, which I caused me to not be able to do anything physically whatsoever. I couldn't run, I couldn't hit, I couldn't throw, I couldn't do anything the same. And I've been living with that for the past 2 years. And so that kind of brought me to where I am today, where I'm not in college anymore. I'm not playing baseball anymore. And right now I'm just coaching, because that's what I can do. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to stay around the game.
Yeah. And like you said, you had your back problems. You said you herniated disc and everything. For the people who don't know, you actually just had surgery. What was it? A week ago from today, right?
Literally a week ago.
A week ago from today, this man has surgery on his back. And I just want to take a quick thing, you know, open your eyes, open your ears a little bit. You're hearing this? This man's a coach on the baseball team, you know, walking around this and that a week after surgery. Can you kind of tell people, how do you feel after the surgery? You know, how do you mentally coming out of that? How do you feel like right now? What would you say your mentally state right now is after the injury and then getting the surgery?
My mental state now is a lot better where it was. I mean, I ultimately wish when this stuff had happened that I could have gotten the surgery done then, but because of my age with this injury, technically surgeons don't like to do this surgery on guys my age. They want people to try to live through it, and because I'm younger, they think that my body's just going to heal itself, which with a lot of people it does, but in my case it just got worse, and it got worse every day that I lived. And so getting this surgery was not only an eye-opener mentally, but physically, because like 2 days ago from today, I woke up for the first time in 2 years with no pain whatsoever. No leg pain, no back pain, no pain whatsoever. And it was crazy to just feel no pain, because my body was so used to being in pain 24/7. But when I say not just mentally but physically, I mean when I was healthy, I never really did what a lot of people do. Like, I never went hiking. I never went and did anything physical. And living in the state of Alaska, you have so many beautiful views. I really never did anything, and I just would sit with my friends and play video games or go to baseball when I did. And I really didn't do anything outside, when Alaska is a place where a lot of people in the United States never even get to see. And so it kind of opened my eyes to, when I get healthy, I want to go on hikes with my friends. I want to go whitewater rafting. I want to do a bunch of stuff that I didn't have an opportunity doing while I was injured, and now I have again because I'm healthy and I'll be able to do that stuff. And mentally, which was a big part of it, mentally, while I had that injury, I was depressed, I was down and out, I was just like, it was just not a good time for me. I was not happy. I was always upset. I was always pissed off or just down because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't move, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do what my friends wanted to do. I couldn't even walk around with my friends. I had to stay in the car or just sit at home. I couldn't do anything. And so now having the surgery and not having any pain, even though I do have to take it very, very lightly for the next 5 weeks until physical therapy because my back is still healing on the inside, even if I don't feel pain. I'm able to walk around with my friends now. I'm able to start planning stuff for when I'm done with physical therapy. I can go do, like camping, like taking hikes, like doing all that kind of stuff with them and actually participating in coaching. When I'm coaching, I can actually hit balls. I can hit, I can throw, I can do everything that I used to be able to do. And so it just changed my mental state where I'm a lot happier. I see the brighter sides of things. I'm just in a way better state than I was when I was injured.
Yeah, because, you know, especially when you go through a sports injury, kind of like a career injury. You basically think about it, it's kind of a career ending injury.
Yeah.
You know, you were sitting to talk about, you know, how mentally, you know, it brings depression. I know, you know, you struggle with depression to a point where, you know, where you just weren't happy with things no more. You know, depression is actually one of the big things, I think, in today's day and age that it's not really spoken upon, you know.
Yeah.
Today's day and age, you know, we want to go out, you know, we want to exploit everything about anything and everybody. But the one thing that we don't really talk about no more is, you know, mental health. You know, I truly believe that most people, young people, you know, teenagers, kids are going through, you know, more depression than, you know, the older generations are. Because if you look at it, you know, you can probably ask, you know, probably like one out of three people in our generations today will probably say they went through a depression. And I know there's going to be people out there who say that, oh, you're not just depression, you're just going through something, you're just going through a little stage. But at the end of the day, you can't tell someone when they are depressed.
Yeah.
You know, people don't show their signs of depression. You know, you see people, you know, who in their public life, they're happy and they're showing like they're living the best life, the life to the fullest. But in the reality, in their own personal, when they're alone, they're miserable, you know. That's why people sleep, you know. That's why people sleep forever. You know, you see these people who are like, oh, I love sleep. You know, do you really love sleep? Or is there something really going on in your mind, you know? Like with the surgery you had, you know, that took a big toll. You know, you're young. You know, you're a young guy, teenager, young adult. You know, you're like you said, you weren't out doing things that, you know, that people your age are doing. You couldn't go out and do these things. You know, now that we got the surgery, it's all good. You know, now it's time to recover. You know, take that time. You know, you got your couple of weeks until you can start physical therapy. Then I say about 3 months, we should see you back fully healthy. You know, pray to God. What, you know, when you were at your lowest point, you know, if you care to talk about it, you know, talk about, you know, where your lowest point, where were you at your lowest? And then what did you do to fight that, to counteract that kind of gave you that motivation to keep going in life and not just give up no more? Because, you know, like I said, this was serious. You know, a lot of people not think about, like, oh, it's just back pain, oh, you just can't walk. But at the end of the day, this is someone's life you're talking about. So, you know, someone who's a young guy who can't do anything, you know, he's on the backseat, he's on the back burner watching everybody have fun while he's living his life miserable. So if you can, you know, just, you know, I'll talk about that a little bit. Talk about, you know, if you, like, say, if you want to, if you don't have to, we can just keep on, we can keep it going like a train, you know, choo-choo, never stop. So, yeah, if you want to, talk about it, and then, you know, a little bit about, you know, what kept you going, what was your motivation?
So, I think that my lowest point was, as soon as I got out of college, as soon as I was not in college anymore, I had moved back in with my mom and her husband. And, when I moved back home, with me just getting out of college because I couldn't do it anymore, me not playing baseball anymore because I couldn't physically do it, that had a toll on my mental health. And then moving back to my mom's house, it was pretty much like, yeah, that's 100% fine. We understand that college isn't for everybody and everything. She was really understanding about it at all. But she was like, okay, but if you're going to live at home, like, you got to find a job in Farmington. You got to help out around the house, all that kind of stuff. And so me and her husband started looking around for jobs, and there was nowhere hiring. There was nowhere that I could possibly work. And just knowing that I couldn't do anything physical and not be able to work. And then I was doing as much as I could around the house, but it was super painful and I couldn't really do anything around the house. Just all that kind of put me at my lowest spot and deepest in depression that I've ever been. And pretty much getting me out of that was actually the guy that's sitting right next to me right now. He was Devin, he was the one that got me out of it, kind of got me out of that state, because he FaceTimed me one night and we were just sitting there on the phone chilling. He was up here in Alaska and I was down there in Missouri, and he was just talking to me about everything that was going on and all the stuff that I was going through and everything. And he threw this crazy thing at me. He was like, "Why don't you move back up to Alaska?" And at the time, I mean, you can ask him 100%. I literally, didn't I say, what the fuck? Like, hell no, I'm not coming back up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's what most people's reaction is. You know, they will sit there, you know, you give them, that's a life change. Moving states, not only that, but moving back to Alaska. Think about it. You know, I know most of our listeners are probably going to be from Alaska, so that y'all understand this. But the people who are not from here, I want y'all to understand, it's a huge move to live up here. Not only that, but it's basically winter half the year, snow and ice everywhere. For basically half the year, the whole population of Alaska is basically walking around like zombies. They're basically depressed. But with that being said, I knew that just the connections that not only do me personally, but I know that connections that you also have here in Alaska, that, you know, I was like, this is the place to thrive.
Yeah.
Not only that, you know, me and Dustin we both lived together for off and on our whole life. From, you know, I grew up down in the South. I grew up in Texas, you know, Texas, Georgia, that area. That's where I'm from. You know, there's a point where he was staying with us for a little bit before he eventually moved up here. I remember when I first moved up to Alaska after my parents' divorce, I basically was living with him. You know, we lived together. You know, we experienced so many things together in life, that I just kind of like just knew, like, all right, my man, my bro, my brother is struggling in life. I'm gonna come up. I'm gonna do whatever I can to try to help him. I work full time. Right now, you know, I don't make the best money out there, but I make enough money to live. And then I'm the type of person where, you know, I'm gonna help out when I can. If I got it, you got it. If I got it, we're breaking the bread together. But if I don't got it, then I don't. You know, I got to a point where I was kind of gave him the idea to, let's move up here. You know, let's get you up here. You know, like he said, he thought I was crazy. But at the end of the day, you know what happened? Look who's sitting next to me right now. This man, you know, because, you know, it's planning. You know, I'm the type of person where if I have a plan, I'm gonna put it to effect. You know, I ain't no hypocrite at all. You know, if I say something, I'm gonna do it. Literally right here, I literally helped pay for this man's ticket to move up here. You know, I'm not gonna say I paid for it all, because I didn't. That's not true at all. But, you know, it was a team effort. You know, he put up half the money, I put up half the money, and then we got him up here. And then now we're here. What advice can you give to people listening, to the people who are here in Alaska or even listening outside Alaska? What can you give an advice that are people who are possibly going through a struggle now or maybe even later? What can you say that for all those people who don't think that life can get better? You know, because you've been there, you've been at your lowest point. You know, what can you say to those people to keep on fighting? What's the best advice you can have?
I think that realistically, it's a crazy thing that we've been best friends since third grade when we met in Texas, because me and you by ourselves have been through so many different things in life that so many people would give up on. Like, just with one of the things that we've gone through, we've both gone through divorces with our families. We've both gone through the military life. We've both gone through moving different states and jumping states, playing for different people for sports, listening to different teachers talk. Like, we've had to pretty much live not just the life, but multiple different lives and multiple different stages of our lives that some people only have to change one time in their life. And so, for us, we're living proof that no matter what life throws at you, you can get through it. There's going to be brighter days. Like, we have days today where we're just like, man, fuck, like, I wish shit was better today, or today was just a shitty day or whatever. And we'll talk about it. We'll get through it. We move on to the next day. And one big thing that you guys should know, all the listeners, is when I was in college, I was studying social work. I wanted to be a counselor. So mental health is like a big thing that I was studying, a big thing that I'm a part of. And just my experiences in life kind of helped me with that. And so realistically, I just from my standpoint, I really think that no matter what you go through in life, you can get through it with the right people and with the right support, but you got to have the right people around you. You got to have those people. And if you don't have those people, you need to go out and get those people. You need to take a real big look and look at the big picture of all your friends or all the people that you're surrounding yourself with, so that you can really understand and really create a life that you want to live. Because if you're not living the life that you want to live right now, you should really take a look at who's around you and what's going on in your life right now that you should change. Because it doesn't matter if you're a freshman in high school, middle school, or an adult. It doesn't matter. It's all about who's around you. If you put successful people around you, you will become successful. If you don't have people, if you have failures around you, you're going to continue to fail, because you are going to be a product of your society. You are going to be who you put yourself around, and situations that you're in are what is going to come of your life. So if you're in a bad situation, really take a look at what everything that's going on around you and people that you're around, and figure out what you need to do different, or think about who you need to be hanging out with different, whatever you got to do. But just know that there's brighter days, there's better days, there's literally on earth there are rainy days and there are super sunny days where it's clear as hell. Earth is a perfect representation. Also, there's going to be brighter days and there's going to be shittier days, and you just got to keep working and keep pushing through every single day of your life.
Yeah, because I know, like we were saying earlier, you know, it's kind of the topic we've been on lately has kind of been like struggles and getting over them. And then, like I said, like today, you know, struggles at all time, you know, depression and struggles are at all time high. Me personally, I think that today's generation honestly has it harder than all the older generations out there. You know, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that, you know, but that's okay. The reason why I say this though is because we live in a world now where, you know, we live in a world where, you know, everything's so priced high. Like here in Alaska, gas is almost $4 a gallon. That's crazy to think of. But at the end of the day,
Small things like milk are expensive.
Milk is crazy expensive. But at the end of the day, we're still gonna buy them. It's not like gas reached $5. Oh hell no, I ain't gonna buy it. I'm gonna go get a horse to old country road, you know, listen to that shit all the way to work. Hell nah, bro. You gonna be like, shit, $5, all right, give me 2 gallons, give me $10 worth, 2 gallons in my tank. You got about maybe 40 miles you can drive. But reality, that's just life though, you know. And then it's sad to say that, you know, we live in a world that where the system of minimum wage was designed that a person can work, you know, don't get me wrong, work your full time. So you're working 40 plus hours, making a minimum wage. You're supposed to be able to live your life. I'm not saying you're living comfortably, but you should be able to make it, you know, paycheck to paycheck. But the sad reality of life is we're sitting here now where that's not true no more. We're in a part where you get paid minimum wage and you still can't pay your bills. You're still $500 short on rent. You can't pay your car insurance. You can't pay your car note. This, cause you know, and I'm not saying that it's nobody's particular fault. I can't sit here and blame like it was this generation or this generation, but I can definitely say that the world that we are at now is definitely not the world that was 10 years ago. And it was not the world that was 20 years ago and 30 years ago. I accept that how the world is changing. But I just believe right now we're in a point where we're struggling. This generation is struggling. We're struggling to find success. Don't get me wrong, there's successful people, but as an overall generation, I'm finding it hard, you know, for us to be successful, you know. What would you say about that, man? What's your input on that?
One big thing that I think we can all agree on with almost all of our parents, that if you're around the ages of like 18 to like 22 or 23, I guarantee you your dad or your mom at some point told you, oh yeah, we used to walk to school. We used to walk miles to school. Like talking like they had to walk from Canada to Alaska to get to school, when in reality they were taking the bus. They had to walk down the road, something like that. They ultimately, I think, are trying to push us to do better by telling us that their life was harder than ours. But I don't really necessarily understand why they do that. I don't understand why older people are trying to make us feel like we need to do more by them telling us that they used to do more than us now, when we have more. I feel like we have more social problems. We have more problems with money. We have being successful problems. We have racial problems. We have, slavery is over. If we haven't realized that, like, slavery has been over for the longest time, we still have fucking problems with that. And it ultimately, like, pisses me off that it's still going on. But we still have these little problems that still have to get fixed. And I feel like our generation is the generation that can help fix that stuff. But right now, we're just at a spot where being successful, like you said, is hard as hell. Getting a job that pays good because your parents want you to move out at 18, and if you just don't feel like college is what you want to do, then you want to move out and you want to do your own thing. You want to get a job. You want to do all that. And I promise you, you can talk to Devin or you can talk to me, especially Devin, because Devin has done it for a long time. But living by yourself out of high school, getting a job and living by yourself, paying all those bills that you got to pay, car, house, getting phone bills, all that kind of stuff, all paying all that stuff that you got to pay for, and working your ass off and having 3/4 of your check that you cut off at the end of those 2 weeks getting sent to everything that you got to pay for, and only have so much money to spend on it. Like, we have that struggle. We have that struggle today. And so that's what we're both dealing with. And I don't think that the older generation really accepts what we're doing in the world and is really taking in how we're changing it and how we're making it better. They're just trying to tell us what all we're doing wrong and what we're doing this and what we're doing that and what they did back in the day. When back in the day, what they did back then isn't going to help us with what's going on right now. That's the past. It's the past of the past. We got to move on from that. We got to grow from that. And we have grown from that as a society and as a nation, as the world. We have all grown from what has happened in the past. But the problem is, those people that have lived back then are still dwelling on the past because of everything that they did back then, when really they need to be worried about what's going on right now. They need to be helping us figure out how to make our children and our grandchildren better than we are today. I don't understand why there's grandparents or there's older people that lived back then that want to be better than us. Why do you want to be better than us when in reality, like me, when I become a father, I want my kids to be set up better than I am. I want my kids to be better off than I am. I want my kids to be happier than I was. I want my kids to have a better life than I did. And I want their kids to have a better life than they did. Like, I feel like we should always be growing. And the generation of the older population right now just thinks that they had to go through more, so they're a better generation, when in reality, they aren't.
You know, I would say, kind of bringing back to like kind of the racial thing you were talking about, it's definitely still definitely present. The main things we really see nowadays are, you know, cop-related incidents. That's kind of what we see, you know, was it at least once every year, once every couple years, you see a huge thing that happens where, you know, a cop shoots somebody and it turns into a big ordeal. You know, a white cop shoots a black guy, you know. And, you know, and I know you got to do what you got to do at your job. But I was also reading this article where this white cop was on trial, a white female, because she walked into an apartment that was not hers and shot a guy. You know, yes, he was a black gentleman, but shot him, mistakenly thinking that it was her apartment. I don't know about y'all, but you know, I know when I walk up to my door, I make sure it's my door. You know, I ain't trying to walk into nobody's house. And I understand, you know, I get that people are gonna say that, you know, all tired, this and that, but you know, but if you're a cop,
you know where you live.
Yeah, you know where you live. And if you're a cop, you should be on alert 24/7. If you're wearing that uniform, you have that badge on you, be alert. Do your job. Be a officer for the community, not for yourself, not for your buddies. You know, come out here. I remember, people have different views on them. You know, some people were like, you know, cops are good. You know, they do their job. They protect the streets. And you also have people saying the cops are corrupt, you know, and they're both right, you know, because you do have good cops. And I'm not saying that most cops are bad, but I am definitely saying that there are a good amount of cops that are out there for them. They're not out there for the community. They're out there for the paycheck. They're out there for their buddies that they work with, for the higher command, you know. And that's a sad reality we live in. And then to also bring it back, you know, where we just look at the world we are today, you know. And, You know, this is kind of off the topic, but if, you know, if the way the world is, especially like how we run the world, you know, we were talking about generations. Right now, we're at an all-time high for pollution right now. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio is actually one. This might sound surprising, but he's actually a huge advocate for trying to save the world for what we are destroying it as. You know, actually, it's scientifically proven. If we don't change the ways we live our life, if we don't stop dumping trash, and you know, in the ocean, you know, in 12 years, the world's not going to be the same. And that's crazy thing, because 12 years. We're still living, you know. Most people think that, you know, most people are like, yeah, that, you know, the world's gonna go to shit, you know, the world's gonna blow up, you know, 2012, this and that, the end of the world, the apocalypse. Apparently, that's gonna happen. That's definitely true. It will happen. But what people don't understand is 12 years. That's everybody living now, except for like, you know, the elderly. That's guaranteed. You know, pray to God. That's guaranteed. You're living through that. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what we had to deal with, because you know I can't put the full blame on older generations saying that it's their fault that the way it is, but it's definitely not from our generation to what it is now. What I'm trying to say is, but then you also got to put in the factor of, you know, a real problem versus people just milking a situation. You know, a good example of a real problem is, you know, let's say, you know, depression. You know, we're kind of go back to that topic. You know, that's a real problem. Someone's depressed, you know, to the point, maybe even to the point, you know, they want to kill themselves. Then you have people who's like, you know what, you know, I was at work today and this person called me fat, this person called me ugly, you know, and then they use that for, then they start doing that their whole, then that one day is messed up because of that. You know, I want to get to a point where we are now at a point where we all just, you know, forget what everybody says about you. Today, we're so caught up in our feelings, you know. If I'm wrong, you know, someone please can correct me. But I remember, even I'm young. I'm only 20 years old. But I remember when I was young, when I was a kid, you know, if you had a problem with somebody, you know, you either confront them about it or you shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? You know, you don't go out here trying to, you know, try to put people on blast on social media to try to, you know, get some fame or get some exposure out of it. You know, I know people who put real serious, you know, situations on Facebook. Like, why would you do that? You know, I know if you've seen this plenty of times too, Dustin, where
people sub-tweeting each other.
Yeah, like people straight up getting Twitter beasts. Like, people are saying, like, you know, colleges, jobs are looking at your social media. You know, I understand nowadays a college degree is losing value, and that's why, you know, a lot of people are opting not to go to college, especially not university, because people don't have the money to pay for that, you know, because that's the world we live in now, where you can't even get an education, you know. But people are just coming out, and then they just, you know, make a big deal over a small situation, or you have people who just, you know, want to attack other people just to have, you know, their name put out there so they can just have, you know, this and that. You know, what do you think about this, man?
We definitely have it. We definitely have it. Multiple situations where people think that the best way to do it is to just go on social media and just rant or say whatever they're gonna say. My biggest pet peeve, and it's not just men, because I promise you, men and women, like, we all got our flaws, and we got almost the exact same flaws. And I promise you, my biggest pet peeve is when, like, somebody's sending you some very personal pictures, and you're dating that person, and y'all really have real feelings for each other and everything, and then something happens in the relationship, and you're like, you know what, I think the best option, because of everything that happened in our relationship, is for me to go post all these pictures that this person sent to me. Like, that is my biggest pet peeve. That person trusted you with that information. Not only that information, but with those pictures. Like, that's somebody's life. That's somebody's life on the line. That's somebody's personal fucking business. Like, when you get in the shower, there's shower curtains for a reason. Because you don't want everybody watching you, seeing your body doing what you're doing to clean yourself up, whatever. That's why there's curtains in there. That's why changing rooms have locking doors, stuff like that. That's why in the bathrooms there's no cameras. because that's somebody's personal business. So when you put somebody's personal business like that out on social media, you are a fucking asshole. Like that's coming from me in general, from somebody that has never done anything like that, but has had it done to me. I've had it done to me. And that's just hella disrespectful. That's just something that you don't do to somebody's life. And like, it didn't have a negative impact on my life. I'm just saying in general, like for women and men that deal with this, it's a big thing going on in our generation, especially when I was in high school. I don't know how it is in high school now, but back when we were in high school, like me and you, when we went to high school together and everything, there was easily so much drama that happened in high school for no reason that everybody got rid of as soon as they graduated. And it's like all shit that they could have got rid of when they were in high school or before it even happened. They didn't have to make it the situation that it was. And so, yeah, I just...
That's why nowadays... Kind of going back to what you're saying a little bit earlier, where you're saying, you know, keep your circle small, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of this, you know, we're running out of time a little bit, but, you know, I kind of want us to kind of give, you know, at the end of this, kind of give like our little piece of advice, you know, a little thing that we can put out there to help the world, to help people do better. You know, for me, I think my one thing is, you know, if you feel something, if you feel passionate about something, stand up for what you believe in, you know, or go chase your dream. We live in a world where everybody wants to go school, college, and then try to do something, you know, or straight from high school going straight to the military because they don't know what they want to do. You know, I personally am one of those people. You know, when I was in high school, I was full on with the military. I did the full process. I went to MEPS and everything. I saw the doctor. But at the end of the day, you know, from that, when I got denied because of health reasons, but at the end of the day, I was devastated when I heard that news. You know, it's not because I really wanted to join the military. At the time, I really did, but it's more of, I was like, fuck, what am I going to do with my life? What do I have going for me right now? You know, you got to understand, when I was playing sports, you know, I got hurt. You know, I got torn ACL, torn meniscus. You know, I got to a point where, you know, you can't really go to the next level. So my thing is do what you got to do, you know. Forget what anybody else has to say. If anybody has something to say about you, they can either tell it to your face and you guys can talk it out like human beings, like men or like women, or just shut up, you know. I mean, there's no need to do all this extra stuff. But and what about you, man? What would you kind of say your last ending advice would be for this episode?
Especially because we talked a lot about mental health and stuff like that with this segment. I want to end on something that a lot of people don't like to talk about, but to narrow it down, a lot of men don't like to talk about, and it's love. Like, I just honestly, I feel like men and men especially are just afraid to love. And I feel like, I promise you, it's open to men and women, but I just feel like we just need to be open to loving people. Like, you gotta love each other. Like, this man Devin next to me, like, he's been my best friend, my brother and everything since third grade. Like, I love this man. This dude is like, this is my main man. This is my brother right here. So I got love for him. This is my dude. Just like he said earlier, if I got it, then we got it. And that's the same thing for me. If I got it, then we got it. And so you just gotta be open to loving people. If you really got passion, like he said, passion for something or somebody, then don't be afraid to love that. Don't be afraid to chase it, because you don't know how long you have. You really don't. And so you need to take every opportunity to make the best out of your life possible. And I feel like everybody needs to experience like real love and real compassion in their life, whether it be relationship wise or just realizing that there's love around you, realizing that there's people that love you and care about you, and people that are in your life that you might not pay attention to that much, but there are people that are really there that really care and love you. And I want people to know that it's not a bad thing to be soft in that way and to love somebody and to really care about somebody, because we all need to experience that. You can't just live this cold, dark life. You got to love somebody. You got to love something. And it doesn't matter what it is. You just got to find that thing or that somebody. And you just got to make sure that you got love coming out of your body. And mentally, it's just going to help you so much to just open up and love somebody and be able to give somebody that part of your heart and that part of your mind. where a lot of people don't see. There's very select few people that see that side of you and get that love and compassion from you. And I feel like that's super important to somebody's mental health, is just being able to love and just being able to appreciate.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. You know, we're gonna end this one here soon, very soon. But keep that thought in your mind. Love, you know. We're gonna explain on that more the next episode. But for now, guys, you know, thank you guys for listening. You know, I'm Devin. This is Dustin right here.
Peace, love, and positivity, my fellows.
Peace, love, and positivity, guys. We love you.